Star Wars, The Last Command, by Timothy Zahn, continued. Cassette number 2, side 1. He glanced over Luke's shoulder at the street behind him. At any rate, I think I'd prefer to try backtracking them from here, see if I can identify their point of origin.
Sounds good, Luke nodded.
I'd better get over to the landing field and get my ship prepped.
I'll be in touch, Carter promised. Make sure that credit line is a generous one.
Standing at the uppermost window of Central Government Tower No. 1, Governor Staffa lowered his macro binoculars with a satisfied snort.
That was him, all right, Fingal, he said to the little man hovering at his side. No doubt about it, Luke Skywalker himself.
Do you suppose he saw the special transport? Fingal asked, fingering his own macro binoculars nervously.
Well, of course he saw it, Staffa growled. You think he was hanging around Mavril Street for his health?
I only thought...
Don't think, Fingal, Staffa cut him off. You aren't properly equipped for it.
He sauntered to his desk, dropped the macro binoculars into a drawer, and pulled up Grand Admiral Thrawn's directive on his datapad. It was a rather bizarre directive, in his private and strictly confidential opinion. More peculiar even than these mysterious troop transfers the Imperial High Command had been running through Kallias of late. But one had no choice under the circumstances but to assume Thrawn knew what he was doing. At any rate, it was on his own head, not Staffa's, if he didn't, and that was the important thing. I want you to send a message to the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera, he told Fingal, lowering his bulk carefully into his chair and pushing the datapad across the desk. Coded as per the instructions here. Inform Grand Admiral Thrawn that Skywalker has been on Kallias and that I have personally observed him near the special transport. Also, as per the Grand Admiral's directive, he has been allowed to leave Berchest unhindered.
Yes, Governor, Fingal said, making notes on his own datapad.
If the little man saw anything unusual about letting a rebel spy walk freely through Imperial territory, he wasn't showing it.
What about the other man, Governor? The one who was with Skywalker down there?
Staffa pursed his lips.
The price on Talon Karda's head was up to nearly 50,000 now. A great deal of money, even for a man with a planetary governor's salary and perks. He had always known that someday it would be in his best interests to terminate the quiet business relationship he had with Karda. Perhaps that time had finally come.
No. No, not while war still raged through the galaxy. Later, perhaps, when victory was near and private supply lines could be made more reliable, but not now.
The other man is of no importance, he told Fingal. A special agent I sent to help smoke the rebel spy into the open. Forget him. Go on, get that message coded and sent.
Yes, sir, Fingal nodded, stepping toward the door. The panel slid open. And for just a second, as Fingal stepped through, Staffa thought he saw an odd glint in the little man's eye. Some strange trick of the outer office light, of course. Next to his unbending loyalty for his governor, Fingal's most prominent and endearing attribute was his equally unbending lack of imagination. Taking a deep breath, putting Fingal and rebel spies and even Grand Admirals out of his mind, Staffa leaned back in his chair and began to consider how he would use the shipment that Karda's people were even now unloading at the landing field.
Chapter 3 Slowly, as if climbing a long, dark staircase, Mara Jade pulled herself out of a deep sleep. She opened her eyes, looked around the softly lit room, and wondered where in the galaxy she was.
It was a medical area. That much was obvious from the biomonitors, the folded room dividers, and the other multi-position beds scattered around the one she was lying in. But it wasn't one of Carda's facilities, at least not one she was familiar with. But the layout itself was all too familiar. It was a standard Imperial recovery room. For the moment, she seemed to be alone, but she knew that wouldn't last. Silently, she rolled out of bed into a crouching position on the floor, taking a quick inventory of her physical condition as she did so. No aches or pains, no dizziness or obvious injuries. Slipping into the robe and bed shoes at the end of the bed, she padded silently to the door, preparing herself mentally to silence or disable whatever was out there. She waved at the door release, and as the panel slid open, she leaped through into the recovery anteroom and came to a sudden, slightly disoriented halt.
"Oh, hi, Mara,"
Gent said distractedly, glancing up from the computer terminal he was hunched over before returning his attention to it.
"How are you feeling?"
"Not too bad," Mara said, staring at the kid and sifting furiously through a set of hazy memories. Gent, one of Carda's employees, and possibly the best slicer in the galaxy. And the fact that he was sitting at a terminal meant they weren't prisoners, unless their captor was so abysmally stupid that he didn't know better than to let a slicer get within spitting distance of a computer. But hadn't she sent Gent to the New Republic headquarters on Coruscant? Yes, she had. On Carda's instructions, just before collecting some of his group together and leading them into that melee at the Katana fleet, where she'd run her Z-95 up against an Imperial Star Destroyer and had had to eject, and had brilliantly arranged to fly her ejector seat straight through an ion cannon beam, which had fried her survival equipment and set her drifting, lost forever in interstellar space. She looked around her. Apparently, forever hadn't lasted as long as she'd expected it to. "Where are we?" she asked, though she had a pretty good idea now what the answer would be. She was right.
"The old Imperial Palace on Coruscant," Gent told her, frowning a little. "Medical wing. They had to do some reconstruction of your neural pathways. Don't you remember?"
"It's a little vague," Mara admitted. But as the last cobwebs cleared from her brain, the rest of it was beginning to fall into place. Her ejector seat's ruined life support system, and a strange, light-headed vagueness as she drifted off to sleep in the darkness. She'd probably suffered oxygen deprivation before they'd been able to locate her and get her to a ship. No, not they. Him. There was only one person who could possibly have found a single crippled ejector seat in all the emptiness and battle debris out there. Luke Skywalker, the last of the Jedi Knights. The man she was going to kill. "You will kill Luke Skywalker." She took a step back to lean against the door jamb, knees suddenly feeling weak as the Emperor's words echoed through her mind. She'd been here, on this world and in this building, when he'd died over Endor. Had watched through his mind as Luke Skywalker cut him down and brought her life crashing in ruins around her head. "I see you're awake," a new voice said. Mara opened her eyes. The newcomer, a middle-aged woman in a duty medic's tunic, was marching briskly across the room toward her from a far door, an MD droid trailing in her wake. "How are you feeling?"
"I'm fine," Mara said, feeling a sudden urge to lash out at the other woman. These people, these enemies of the Empire, had no right to be here in the Emperor's palace.
She took a careful breath, fighting back the flash of emotion. The medic had stopped short, a professional frown on her face. Gent,
his cherished computers momentarily forgotten, had a puzzled look on his.
"Sorry," she muttered. "I guess I'm still a little disoriented."
"Understandable," the medic nodded. "You've been lying in that bed for a month, after all."
Mara stared at her.
"A month?"
"Well, most of a month," the medic corrected herself. "You also spent some time in a Bacta tank. Don't worry. Short-term memory problems are common during neural reconstructions, but they nearly always clear up after the treatment."
"I understand," Mara said mechanically.
"A month. She'd lost a whole month here. And in that time..." "We have a guest suite arranged for you upstairs whenever you feel ready to leave here," the medic continued. "Would you like me to see if it's ready?"
Mara focused on her.
"That would be fine," she said.
The medic pulled out a comlink and thumbed it on, and as she began talking, Mara stepped past her to Ghent's side.
"What's been happening with the war during the last month?" she asked him.
"Oh, the Empire's been making the usual trouble," Ghent said, waving toward the sky. "They've got the folks here pretty stirred up anyway. Akbar and Maydeen and the rest have been running around like crazy, trying to push them back or cut them off, something like that."
And that was, Mara knew, about all she would get out of him on the subject of current events. Aside from a fascination with smuggler folklore, the only thing that really mattered to Ghent was slicing at computers. She frowned, belatedly remembering why Carda had ordered Ghent here in the first place.
"Wait a minute," she said. "Akbar's back in command? You mean you've cleared him already?"
"Sure," Ghent said. "That suspicious bank deposit thing Counselor Felia made such a fuss over was a complete fraud. The guys who did that electronic break-in at the bank planted it in his account at the same time. Probably Imperial Intelligence. It had their nose prints all over the programming." "Oh, sure. I proved that 2 days after I got here."
"I imagine they were pleased. So why are you still here?"
"Well..." For a moment, Ghent seemed taken aback. "No one's come back to get me, for one thing."
His face brightened.
"Besides, there's this really neat encrypt code someone nearby is using to send information to the Empire. General Bel Iblis says the Imperials call it Delta Source, and that it's sending them stuff right out of the palace."
"And he asked you to slice it for them,"
Mara nodded, feeling her lip twist.
"I don't suppose he offered to pay you or anything."
"Well," Ghent shrugged, "probably they did. I don't remember, really."
The medic replaced her comlink in her belt.
"Your guide will be here momentarily," she told Mara. "Thank you,"
Mara said, resisting the urge to tell the other that she probably knew the Imperial Palace better in her sleep than any guide they had could do in broad daylight. Cooperation and politeness. Those were the keys to talking them out of a ship and getting her and Ghent out of this place and out of their war. Behind the medic, the door slid open, and a tall woman with pure white hair glided into the room.
"Hello, Mara," she said, smiling gravely. "My name is Winter, personal aide to Princess Leia Organa Solo. I'm glad to see you on your feet again."
"I'm glad to be there," Mara said, trying to keep her voice polite.
Someone else associated with Skywalker, just what she needed.
"I take it you're my guide."
"Your guide, your assistant, and anything else you need for the next few days," Winter said. "Princess Leia asked me to look after you until she and Captain Solo return from Filva."
"I don't need an assistant, and I don't need looking after," Mara said.
All I really need is a ship.
I've already started working on that, Winter said. I'm hoping we'll be able to find something for you soon. In the meantime, may I show you to your suite?
Mara hid a grimace. The usurpers of the New Republic, graciously offering her hospitality in what had once been her own home.
That's very kind of you, she said, trying not to sound sarcastic. You coming, Gent?
You go on ahead, Gent said absently, gazing at the computer display. I want to sit on this run for a while.
He'll be all right here, Winter assured her. This way, please.
They left the anteroom, and Winter led the way toward the rear of the palace.
Gent has a suite right next to yours, Winter commented as they walked. But I don't think he's been there more than twice in the past month. He set up temporary shop out there in the recovery anteroom, where he could keep an eye on you.
Mara had to smile at that. Gent, who spent roughly 90% of his waking hours oblivious to the outside world, was not exactly what she would go looking for in either a nurse or a bodyguard. But it was the thought that counted.
I appreciate you people taking care of me, she told Winter. It's the least we could do to thank you for coming to our assistance at the Katana battle.
It was Karda's idea, Mara said shortly. Thank him, not me.
We did, Winter said. But you risked your life, too, on our behalf. We won't forget that.
Mara threw a sideways look at the white-haired woman. She had read the Emperor's files on the rebellion's leaders, including Leia Organa, and the name Winter wasn't ringing any bells at all.
How long have you been with Organa Solo? She asked.
I grew up with her in the royal court of Alderaan, Winter said, a bittersweet smile touching her lips.
We were friends in childhood,
and when she began her first steps into galactic politics, her father assigned me to be her aide. I've been with her ever since.
I don't recall hearing about you during the height of the rebellion, Mara probed gently.
I spent most of the war moving from planet to planet, working with supply and procurement, Winter told her. If my colleagues could get me into a warehouse or depot on some pretext, I could draw a map for them of where the items were that they wanted. It made the subsequent raids quicker and safer.
Mara nodded as understanding came.
So you were the one called Targeter, the one with the perfect memory.
Winter's forehead creased slightly.
Yes, that was one of my code names, she said. I had many others over the years.
I see, Mara said.
She could remember a fair number of references in pre-Yavin intelligence reports to the mysterious rebel named Targeter, much of the politely heated discussion centering around his or her possible identity. She wondered if the data pushers had ever even gotten close. They'd reached the set of turbolifts at the rear of the Imperial Palace now, one of the major renovations the Emperor had made in the deliberately antiquated design of the building when he'd taken it over. The turbolifts saved a lot of walking up and down the sweeping staircases in the more public parts of the building, as well as masking certain other improvements the Emperor had made in the palace.
So what's the problem with getting me a ship? Mara asked, as Winter tapped the call plate.
The problem is the Empire, Winter said. They've launched a massive attack against us, and it's tied up basically everything we have available, from light freighter on up.
Mara frowned. Massive attacks against superior forces didn't sound like Grand Admiral Thrawn at all.
It's that bad?
It's bad enough, Winter said.
I don't know if you knew it, but they beat us to the Katana fleet. They'd already moved nearly 180 of the dreadnoughts by the time we arrived. Combined with their new bottomless source of crewers and soldiers, the balance of power has been badly shifted.
Mara nodded, a sour taste in her mouth. Put that way, it did sound like Thrawn.
Which means I nearly got myself killed for nothing.
Winter smiled tightly.
If it helps, so did a lot of other people.
The turbolift car arrived. They stepped inside and Winter keyed for the palace's residential areas.
Kent mentioned that the Empire was making trouble, Mara commented as the car began moving upward. I should have realized that anything that could penetrate that fog he walks around in had to be serious.
Serious is an understatement, Winter said grimly. In the past 5 days, we've effectively lost control of 4 sectors, and 13 more are on the edge. The biggest loss was the food production facilities at Ukiyo. Somehow, they managed to take it with its defenses intact.
Mara felt her lip twist. Someone asleep at the board?
Not according to the preliminary reports. Winter hesitated.
There are rumors that the Imperials used a new superweapon that was able to fire straight through the Ukian's planetary shield. We're still trying to check that out.
Mara swallowed, visions of the old Death Star spec sheets floating up from her memory. A weapon like that in the hands of a strategist like Grand Admiral Thrawn. She shook the thought away. This wasn't her war. Carda had promised they would stay neutral in this thing.
I suppose I'd better get in touch with Carda then, she said. See if he can send someone to pick us up.
It would probably be faster than waiting for one of our ships to be free, Winter agreed. He left a data card with the name of a contact you can send a message through. He said you'd know which encrypt code to use. The turbolift let them out on the president's guest floor, one of the few sections of the palace that the emperor had left strictly alone during his reign. With its old-fashioned hinge doors and hand-carved exotic wood furnishings, walking around the floor was like stepping 1,000 years into the past. The emperor had generally reserved the suites here for those emissaries who had fond feelings for such bygone days, or for those who could be impressed by his carefully manufactured continuity with that era. Captain Carda left some of your clothes and personal effects for you after the Katana battle, Winter said, unlocking one of the carved doors and pushing it open. If he missed anything, let me know, and I can probably supply it. Here's the data card I mentioned, she added, pulling it from her tunic.
Thank you, Mara said, inhaling deeply as she took the card.
This particular suite was done largely in Fijisi wood from Cardoween, and as the delicate scent rose around her, her thoughts flashed back to the glittering days of grand imperial power and majesty.
Can I get you anything else?
The memory faded. Winter was standing before her, and the glory days of the Empire were gone.
No, I'm fine, she said.
Winter nodded.
If you want anything, just call the duty officer, she said, gesturing to the desk. I'll be available later. Right now, there's a council meeting I need to sit in on.
Go ahead, Mara said,
and thank you.
Winter smiled and left. Mara took another deep breath of Fijisi wood, and with an effort pushed the last of the lingering memories away. She was here, and it was now, and as the Emperor's instructors had so often drummed into her, the first item of business was to fit into her surroundings, and that meant not looking like an escapee from the medical wing.
Carda had left a good assortment of clothing for her. A semi-formal gown, two outfits of a nondescript type that she could wear on the streets of 100 worlds without looking out of place, and 4 of the no-nonsense tunic jumpsuit outfits that she usually wore aboard ship. Choosing one of the latter, she got dressed, then began sorting through the other things Carda had left. With any luck, and maybe a little foresight on Carda's part, there it was, the forearm holster for her tiny blaster. The blaster itself was missing, of course. The captain of the Adamant had taken it away from her, and the Imperials weren't likely to return it any time soon. Looking for a duplicate in the New Republic's arsenals would probably be a waste of effort as well, though she was tempted to ask Winter for one, just to see the reaction. Fortunately, there was another way. Each residential floor of the Imperial Palace had an extensive library, and in each of those libraries was a multi-card set entitled The Complete History of Corvus Minor. Given how unexceptional most of Corvus Minor's history had been, the odds of anyone actually pulling the set off the shelf were extremely slim. Which, given there were no actual data cards in the box, was just as well. The blaster was a slightly different style from the one Mara had lost to the Imperials. But its power pack was still adequately charged, and it fit snugly into her forearm holster, and that was all that mattered. Now, whatever happened with either the war or New Republic infighting, she would at least have a fighting chance. She paused, the false data card box in her hand, a stray question belatedly flicking through her mind. What had Winter meant by that reference to a bottomless source for crewers and soldiers? Had one or more of the New Republic systems gone over to the Imperial side? Or could Thrawn have discovered a hitherto unknown colony world with a populace ripe for recruitment? It was something she should probably ask about sometime. First, though, she needed to get a message encrypted and relayed out to Carda's designated contact. The sooner she was out of this place, the better. Replacing the empty data card set, the comforting weight of the blaster snugged up against her left arm, she headed back to her suite. Thrawn raised his glowing red eyes from the putrid-looking alien artwork displayed on the double display rings surrounding his command chair. "No," he said. "Completely out of the question." Slowly, deliberately, Cabal turned back from the holographic Oostroid statue he'd been gazing at. "No," he repeated, his voice rumbling like an approaching thunderstorm. "What do you mean, no?" "The word is self-explanatory," Thrawn said icily. "The military logic should be as well. We don't have the numbers for a frontal assault on Coruscant. Neither have we the supply lines and bases necessary for a traditional siege. Any attack would be both useless and wasteful, and the Empire will therefore not launch one." Cabal's face darkened. "Have a care, Grand Admiral Thrawn," he warned. "I rule the Empire, not you." "Do you really?" Thrawn countered, reaching up behind him to stroke the Isalamir arched over his shoulder on its nutrient frame. Cabal drew himself up to his full height, eyes blazing with sudden fire. "I rule the Empire," he shouted, his voice echoing through the command room. "You will obey me, or you will die." Carefully, Pelion eased a little deeper into the force-empty bubble that surrounded Thrawn's Isalamir. At those times when he was in control of himself, Cabaoth appeared more confident and in control than he ever had before. But at the same time, these violent bursts of clone madness were becoming more frequent and more vicious. Like a system in a positive feedback loop, swinging farther from its core point with each oscillation,
until it ripped itself apart. So far, Kabaoth hadn't killed anyone or destroyed anything. In Pelion's opinion, it was just a matter of time before that changed. Perhaps the same thought had occurred to Thrawn.
If you kill me, you'll lose the war, he reminded the Jedi Master. And if you lose the war, Leia Organa Solo and her twins will never be yours.
Kabaoth took a step toward Thrawn's command seat, eyes blazing even hotter. And then, abruptly, he seemed to shrink again to normal size.
You would never speak that way to the Emperor, he said, almost petulantly.
On the contrary, Thrawn told him. On no fewer than 4 occasions, I told the Emperor that I would not waste his troops and ships attacking an enemy which I was not yet prepared to defeat.
Kabaoth snorted.
Only fools spoke that way to the Emperor, he sneered. Fools, or those tired of life.
The Emperor also thought that way, Thrawn agreed. The first time I refused, he called me a traitor and gave my attack force to someone else.
The Grand Admiral reached up again to stroke his Isalamir.
After its destruction, he knew better than to ignore my recommendations.
For a long minute, Kabaoth studied Thrawn's face, his own expression twitching back and forth as if the mind behind it was having trouble maintaining a grip on thought or emotion.
You could repeat the Ukian fraud, he suggested at last. That trick with cloaked cruisers and timed turbolaser blasts. I would help you.
That's most generous of you, Thrawn said. Unfortunately, that too would be a waste of effort. The rebel leaders on Coruscant wouldn't be as quick to surrender as Ukio's farm folk were. No matter how accurate our timing, they'd eventually realize that the turbolaser blasts hitting the surface weren't the same as those fired by the Chimera, and come to the proper conclusion.
He gestured to the holographic statues filling the room.
The people and leaders of Wustri, on the other hand, are a different matter entirely. Like the Ukians, they have a strong fear of the unknown and what they perceive to be the impossible. Equally important, they have a tendency to magnify rumors of menace far out of proportion. The cloaked cruiser stratagem should work quite well there.
Kabal's face was starting to redden again.
Grand Admiral Thrawn.
But as to Organa Solo and her twins, Thrawn cut him off smoothly, you can have them whenever you wish.
The embryonic tantrum evaporated.
What do you mean? Kabaoth demanded warily.
I mean that attacking Coruscant and carrying off Organa Solo by brute force is impractical, Thrawn said. Sending in a small group to kidnap her, on the other hand, is perfectly feasible. I've already ordered intelligence to assemble a commando team for that purpose. It should be ready within the day.
A commando team, Cabal's lip twisted. Need I remind you how your Nogri have continually failed you in this matter?
I agree, Thrawn said, an oddly grim note to his voice. Which is why the Nogri will not be involved.
Pelion looked down at the Grand Admiral in surprise, then threw an involuntary glance at the door to the command room anteroom where Thrawn's bodyguard Ruch was waiting. Ever since the Lord Darth Vader had first duped the Nogri into their perpetual service to the Empire, the gullible, gray-skinned aliens had insisted on putting their own personal honor on the line with each mission. Being pulled off an assignment, especially one this important, would be like a slap in the face to them. Or worse. Admiral, he murmured, I'm not sure.
"We'll discuss it later, Captain," Thrawn said. "For now, all I need to know is whether Master Cabal is truly ready to receive his young Jedi." One blue-black eyebrow lifted. "Or whether he prefers simply discussing it."
Cabal smiled thinly. "Am I to take that as a challenge, Grand Admiral Thrawn?"
"Take it any way you like," Thrawn said. "I merely point out that a wise tactician considers the cost of an operation before launching it. Organa Solo's twins are due to be born any day now, which means you would have two infants as well as Organa Solo herself to deal with. If you're not certain you can handle that, it would be best to postpone the operation."
Pelion braced himself for another explosion of clone madness. But to his surprise, it didn't come.
"The only question, Grand Admiral Thrawn," Cabal said softly, "is whether newborn infants will be too much for your Imperial commandos to handle."
"Very well," Thrawn nodded. "Our rendezvous with the rest of the fleet will be in 30 minutes. You'll transfer to the Death's Head at that time to assist in their attack on Wustri. By the time you return to the Chimera," again the eyebrow lifted, "we should have your Jedi for you."
"Very well, Grand Admiral Thrawn," Cabal said.
He drew himself up again, smoothing his long white beard away from his robe.
"But I warn you, if you fail me this time, you will not be pleased with the consequences."
Turning, he strode across the command room and through the door.
"It's always such a pleasure," Thrawn commented under his breath as the door slid shut.
Pelion worked moisture into his mouth.
"Admiral, with all due respect..."
"You're worried about my having promised to get Organa Solo out of possibly the most secure place in Rebellion Hell territory," Thrawn said.
"Actually, sir, yes," Pelion said. "The Imperial Palace is supposed to be an impregnable fortress."
"Yes, indeed," Thrawn agreed. "But it was the Emperor who made it that way. And, as in most things, the Emperor kept a few small secrets about the palace to himself, and to certain of his favorites."
Pelion frowned down at him. "Secrets? Such as a private way in and out?" he hazarded. Thrawn smiled up at him.
"Precisely. And now that we can finally ensure that Organa Solo will be staying put in the palace for a while, it becomes profitable to try sending in a commando team."
"But not a Nogri team." Thrawn lowered his eyes to the collection of holographic sculptures surrounding them.
"There's something wrong with the Nogri, Captain," he said quietly. "I don't yet know what it is, but I know it's there. I can sense it with every communication I have with the dynasts on Honor."
Pelion thought back to that awkward scene a month ago when that painfully apologetic envoy from the Nogri dynasts had come aboard with the news that the suspected traitor Kabarak had escaped from their custody. So far, despite their best efforts, they'd been unable to recapture him.
"Perhaps they're still fidgeting over that Kabarak thing," he suggested.
"And well they should be," Thrawn said coldly. "But it's more than that. And until I find out how much more, the Nogri will remain under suspicion."
He leaned forward, tapped two controls on his board. The holographic sculptures faded and were replaced by a tactical map of the current position of the major battle planes.
"But at the moment, we have two more pressing matters to consider," he continued, leaning back in his seat again. "First,
We have to divert our increasingly arrogant Jedi Master from this mistaken notion that he has the right to rule my empire. Organa Solo and her twins are that diversion.
Pelion thought about all the other attempts to capture Organa Solo. And if the team fails...
There are contingencies, Thrawn assured him. Despite his power, and even his unpredictability, Master Cabauth can still be manipulated.
He gestured toward the tactical map.
What's even more important right now, though, is that we ensure the momentum of our battle plan. So far, the campaign is reasonably on schedule. The rebellion has resisted more firmly than anticipated in the Farfin and Dolomar sectors. But elsewhere, the target systems have generally bowed to Imperial power.
I wouldn't consider any of the gains all that solid yet, Pelion pointed out.
Precisely, Thrawn nodded. Each depends on our maintaining a strong and highly visible Imperial presence. And for that, it's vital that we maintain our supply of clones.
He paused. Pelion looked at the tactical map, his mind racing as he searched for the response Thrawn was obviously waiting for him to come up with. The Sperti cloning cylinders, hidden away for decades in the Emperor's private storehouse on Wayland, were about as safe as anything in the galaxy could be. Buried beneath a mountain, protected by an Imperial garrison, and surrounded by hostile locals, its very existence was unknown to anyone except the top Imperial commanders. He froze. Top Imperial commanders. And perhaps... Mara Jade, he said. She's convalescing on Coruscant. Would she have known about the storehouse?
That is indeed the question, Thrawn agreed. There's a good chance she doesn't. I knew many of the Emperor's secrets, and it still took me a great deal of effort to find Wayland. But it's not a risk we can afford to take.
Pelion nodded, suppressing a shiver. He'd been wondering why the Grand Admiral had chosen an intelligence squad for this mission. Unlike standard commando units, intelligence units were trained in such non-military methods as assassination. Will a single team be handling both missions, sir, or will you be sending in two?
One team should be adequate, Thrawn said. The two objectives are well enough interlocked to make that reasonable. And neutralizing Jade does not necessarily mean killing her.
Pelion frowned. But before he could ask what Thrawn had meant by that, the Grand Admiral touched his board, and the tactical holo was replaced by a map of Orus sector.
In the meantime, I think it's time to underline the importance of the Kalia Saj Lilu for our enemies. Do we have a follow-up report yet from Governor Staffa?
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.